C1AP. Number 18B.
So, let's quickly look at Revelation. And I say quickly, without really investigating all the many symbols. Again, John Dolig is a good interpretation in the Oxford Summer School Report, 1948, in the second volume. So we can study there if you want to know more about it. For us, actually, it's much more important just to see the metaphysical method that is used and not to be too dependent on the biblical symbolism. But just in order to prove the case, let's quickly go through the text. And you have on page 8 of the blue study material a survey of it, and you can flow with that survey, I think, very easily. So the text says that it was said, pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. And so it was poured out on the earth. And you have, you will see that it in the last column, it's always something else on which it is poured out. And these are all symbolisms that the Bible had used in order to bring out the specific tones. So it was said, pour out his vial upon the earth. And there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast. And that grievous sore, you see, the moment love forces us to give up what is false and try to destroy to what we cling, it is as if it would be a noisome and grievous sore. So love chastens and handles fear and hate and tribulation and whatever we can call it, what is the counterfeit of love. In truth, the angel poured out his vial upon the sea. And so he shows the sea as the destruction of error by truth. Namely, that sea became as the blood of a dead man. And you see, always, somehow, when the term man comes in, it is either the counterfeit of truth or, in the fore, the counterfeit of Christianity. So here we have it as truth, the counterfeit of the true man, when truth handles the belief of mortal men, and it became as blood as of a dead man, a dead sense of manhood. And every living soul died in the sea. So you have a good picture of manhood. If you come to life, he has to show how life destroys its counterfeit. There the angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters. You know, life is the well of life, and it has to do with that water of life that from which we drink. Here, therefore, all that had to do with waters as rivers and fountains of waters became blood. So it shows that life handles a false sense of life, a mortal sense of life. Blood is always the mortal sense of life. And the angels of the water say, thou art righteous, O Lord, which art and was and shall be. So they show here the nature of life as that which is and was and shall be. But that life, as it was said, when it is poured out on the rivers and fountains of water, on the mortal stream of life, then it became like blood. It shows that it handles mortality and destroys it. Principle is different. The angel poured out his vial upon the sun. Can you remember how often we had already the sun in the seven. And each time when they talk about the sun or the moon or the stars, it is always a symbol of the fourth day of creation, which they knew so well. So if they would use that as a negative, they always used it as a symbol for government or for system. So it poured out his vial of principle, and so handled really all our beliefs in false system. And power was given to scorch men with fire, and they repented not to give him glory. Then it comes to soul. Again, we have here that the angel poured out his vial upon what? Now it is the seat of the beast. The seat of the beast was always the rule of soul. The king was ruling from his seat, and so it was always used in the Bible as the rule of soul and of the beast. They blasphemed God because of their pains and their sores. Can you see the counterfeit of soul is pain, the sores? But they repented not of their deeds, so they were destroyed. Then you come to spirit, and shows here how spirit handles dualism and crisis and these things. And so it is said the angel poured his vial upon the great river Euphrates. Well, Euphrates is one of the four rivers, and it has in Mrs. Eddy's explanation a positive and a negative interpretation. It is either science or the counterfeit of science, namely the calculus of unreality, the counterfeit of science. But it shows that the waters thereof was dried up. There was no more unfoldment, no more progress, no more fruits, it dried up. But spirit naturally is the fruit of spirit, is the substance of spirit, but that can dry up the mortal calculus. That can show that the mortal calculus has no unfoldment, has no progress, cannot evolve, has no fruits. And three unclean spirits like frogs came out of the mouth of the dragon. They are the spirit of devils. Out of that Euphrates came the frogs. Frogs are usually a symbol, way back in Egypt, for impurity, the counterfeit of spirit. So can you see, they always took, in order to bring out something as a counterfeit of a synonymous term, those symbols that were used since time immemorial in the Old or New Testament. And here are the frogs. Coupled with the Euphrates, really showing that the false sense of Euphrates, the false sense of divine science, is actually the calculus of unreality, and that is impure. But it cannot have any fruits. And he gathered them together to Armageddon. Is that right? Armageddon. And Armageddon was always the last battle. That was the symbol of the last battle, the battle between spirit and the flesh. Crisis. So can you see here, spirit is here showing that if the vial of spirit is cast out, it shows up really the powerlessness of a false calculus, and that brings about the last battle, the battle on the conflict of spirit with the flesh. And then we come to mind, where the Bible wants to show that the synonymous term mind handles the manifold beliefs of mortal mind. In order to bring out the sense of mortal mind, they always took that which those symbols which had to do with mortal mind, especially the symbol air. It's so airy, it has nothing in it. So air, it says, and the great voice said, it is done, and there was a great earthquake. And the great city was divided into three parts. The great city here, still Babylon. The real city, the city four square, has not yet been introduced. But what has been introduced was Babylon, the great city. And so, because we had it already before, Babylon is fallen. So the great city was divided into three parts. And those three important parts, which we already had in chapter 13, namely the belief that there is life, substance, and intelligence in matter. And the cities of the nations fell. Always when it was the city of the nations, then it was that universal or myriad beliefs of the human mind. They all fell. They were like air. They fell. They evaporated, so to say, into the air. And Babylon was given the cup of the wine of the fierceness of the God's wrath. Can you see that whole vision of Saul always talks about God's wrath, always about the annihilation of the counterfeit of God. So Babylon was given the cup of the wine of the fierceness of God's wrath, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven. Again, hail was always a symbol for mind. We had it already before in Revelation, that hail was always brought out for the power of mind, or for the opposite, for the power of mortal mind. Here a great hail, just the irresistible. They always wanted to show with rain that it is irresistible. It was not just like rain, but when hail was falling, it gave them a sense everything is being destroyed under the hail. Because we know a farmer, and they were farmer people, they were dependent on their crops and so on. When hail fell, that was the end of it. That was really destruction, like the locusts or so. So through that it shows that mind's power is like hail for mortal mind. It is an irresistible destruction of the manifold beliefs of that city Babylon, of the beliefs of the human mind. And so he ended the picture. Now I have gone very quickly through these seven, and the symbolism is more or less clear. Perhaps in some ways one would think, why is it this symbol, not that symbol, and so on. But Mrs. Eddy has taught us to look at generalities and not specialities. And the generality of it is very clear. It is showing the symbolism of the inverted world order. It's further clear that it always shows that it destroys completely something, that it shows the law of annihilation. So that we can really today, after 2,000 years, lift that whole symbolism out of that time into the more definite and more abstract symbolism of today, with our knowledge of the seven synonymous terms and their ideas and their counterfeits. Therefore, we find here in this description, really, a wonderful method of how to handle animal magnetism from the throne of grace. It shows us first something, that it is from the throne of grace, and therefore we can only go out from the throne of grace if we first have found our way to the throne of grace and have sat down on the throne of grace. It's no use to try to imitate the Revelator and say, all right, from now on I'm going to handle animal magnetism or any case or any situation from the point of view of love, then to truth, life, principle, soul, spirit, mind, that's no use if within our consciousness, within our temple, the smoke of the fullness of grace, of the glory of God and His power is not established. That went before. Therefore, we can only handle it that way if we really have within ourselves the definite tonality of those seven synonymous terms. Or, as I have said before, and John Dolly was telling us about his way of practice and his way of spending the morning in his easy chair, that he was saying, I first feel my thought through mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love, by thinking and pondering what is mind, what does mind mean, what is the implication of mind, how does mind lead to spirit, what are the ideas of spirit, how do they lead to soul, what are the ideas of soul, what are the implications that God is soul, filling thought more and more with principles, seeing now this is the principle of being, I have got now and touched the principle of being, so there is no other principle on which I can rely. And so building up that principle and say, what is then that principle demonstrating, interpreting? Well, it demonstrates only itself, namely itself as life, itself as truth, itself as love. What does that mean? See, that takes about an hour or so, what I have said in 2 minutes, just to fill one's consciousness, one's temple, with the smoke of the glory of God and His power. Then you can let go. Then you can pour out the vials on the seven last plates. Then from that altitude of the glory of God, we can take those seven synonymous terms and see why the very counterfeit of those seven synonymous terms are nothing, have no power, and therefore do not exist. And therefore, in order to do that, we can flow through this synonymous term. But always in a way, you see, that we go out from love in order to see that the counterfeit of the synonymous term are nothing and are destroyed through those synonymous terms. Only in that way is the method right. Only to show that the fact destroys the counterfeit. So, in the measure you have a full sense of the seven synonymous term, you can sit back again and contemplate how those vials are poured out from the throne of grace. And you begin with love and say, well, I begin at the point of perfection because that I have established as the glory of God, I have established that, and I'm not going to deviate anymore from that perfection of God. So if I go out from the perfection of glory of God, then I can see that everything that is not in line with that perfection is nothing and therefore is being destroyed by that glory. So I begin to see, because love is the perfection of everything, I can see that that is destroying radically all sense of imperfection. Because love is the plan of love, I begin to see that that plan of love is going to destroy and to prevent any other plan of hate and jealousy of human wisdom, or any plane of the human mind or mortal influence, any other plane is going to be brought to naught, and it will be proof that it is naught. Because that plane of love is constantly working and working and working, and in working out its own idea, it destroys the possibility, the sense of any counterfeit of plane. Or you can see that the motherhood of love, which is the glory of love, that motherhood of love will take care of every false sense of motherhood. That the human sense of motherhood, a stepmother sense of motherhood, is taken care of, and that the true sense of motherhood that cares for the idea, that loves the idea, that hugs the idea, that embraces the idea, that protects the idea, is the fact that is going to destroy its very opposite, so that no false motherhood can prevail over our consciousness or prevail over our way of life. So you can take all the ideas of love that come into your mind and see that they are at the point of fulfillment and perfection, and that therefore no other concept, no argument of mortal mind, of jealousy, of hate, of envy, of fear, of iniquity, whatever it is, can have fulfillment. Because the fulfillment of love will prevent the fulfillment of hate and fear and will destroy it eventually. Or you go to the tone of truth and you fill your thought with the perfection of truth, because you know truth in its fullness is the fact of being, and therefore that factuality of being is the law of annihilation to everything unlike that factuality. It therefore, the factuality of truth will therefore destroy all that sense of unrighteousness, all the guessing about things that are not definite, right, that cannot see what is right, so that the indefiniteness of your consciousness is dominated by the factuality of truth, and that truth says, I will destroy every indefinite consciousness. Or that consciousness, which is the consciousness of God, which is the divine consciousness, is really a power of destruction to all those modes of consciousness that try to form and mold our manhood. It's therefore a law of annihilation for the individual erroneous consciousness, for the collective erroneous consciousness, for the heretical sense of consciousness, for all the false unconsciousness in the world. I constantly try to find the right term that doesn't quite come into German. It destroys really the archetypal consciousness, which is so important, because we all seem to be molded and formed by old beliefs, by universal belief, collective belief, by the collective unconscious, by archetypal consciousness, all that has been in the past, in the long past, in the pre-existence. All that tries to form our character. Parental consciousness tries to form our character. We have to get rid of all that, so that we entertain only that consciousness which truth is conscious of. So the divine consciousness, super consciousness, so to say, of truth, is taking care of all these other forms of consciousness and makes them null and void, so that they find no entry into my temple. Or you take the form of truth that destroys any form of disease, any form of discord, or you take life and you establish within yourself the wonderful sense of the fullness of life, of the individuality of life, that we have the infinite individuality of life with all its spontaneity and with all its individuality, and that takes care really of all the idiosyncrasy within our character and destroys them. The more we build up the true individuality of life, the fullness of life, that life which only draws from God as life, that will destroy the poverty of our mortal existence and will give us the fullness of life, the supply of life, and therefore takes away every sense of limitation, of poverty, of lack, and so on. Just like principle, if we establish within ourselves the true sense of principle, namely that sense of principle which says, I'm God. I'm not the principle of natural science or of chemical science or whatever that science is. I am the principle of the universe, of the divine universe, the principle of being. And so if I fill my consciousness with that, I begin to realize that that principle of being in all its system, in all its science, in all its categories is going to destroy within me the false categories of existence. All those categories that build, say, on morality, that build on matter, that build on mortal mind, that build on human thinking, of human wants and woe, all those categories are going to be torn down and brought to nothing because within me I begin to build more and more a categorized consciousness so that my consciousness is constantly thinking in terms of divine categories in the divine system, and so it destroys that sense that I constantly think in atomistic truths and try to find a solution and a proof of that principle through atomistic thinking. Or you take the sense of soul, I have to hurry, the sense of soul, you fill your consciousness with soul, with the bliss of soul, the satisfaction of soul, the infinite balance of soul, the sinlessness of soul, and the more you see your true identity as a sinless expression of that soul, that only identity of ourselves, that begins to destroy the false sense of us, the mortal sense of us, the mortal sense, the material sense of us. And as it begins to destroy that material sense of us, we lose the false sense of identity and gain the true sense of our true identity as men. And so with spirit, we fill our thought with the substance of spirit, the fruits of spirit, the unfoldment and development and evolution of spirit and the birth of spirit. Then that takes care of material birth, of a wrong sense of fruit, the wrong sense of development, and the wrong sense of evolution, and really begins to bring us into the true order of spirit and takes us out of the chaos and disorder of mortal existence. Or you take mind, and filling our thought with all the ideas of mind really is naturally terrific, because that one mind, the power of mind, is like hailstorm to mortal mind. It begins to destroy all belief in false laws, in false forces, in false actions, in false power, in a false sense of guidance and leadership, and begins to establish within us that only the mind shines through us, only that mind constantly comes to us, influences us, and brings to light mind's power, so that little by little, really, all the power that mortal mind seems to have is brought to naught. That's the way you can take your knowledge of the seventh synonymous term, and from that point, see that Babylon is fallen.